That was an awesome, awesome season by Fernando, and that was a great way to finish it off. You know, he didn't have, like, numbers off the chart because Miami's defense is really good and really fast, and Miami's got some really good players on that team, man. That kid Malachi Toney is going to be a first-rounder when he comes out. He's 18 years old, so he's got another year, I think, that he's got to go through before he can come and play in the NFL. But, man, I'll tell you what, he is a tough kid. He is a strong kid. They hit him hard early in the game, busted his lip up. That was a cheap shot, by the way, I thought, and should have been called. But he stood in there, he took it, he handled it, and then on the most important play of the game, they decide to have him run a quarterback draw, and he does the old John Elway kind of diving into the end zone. And I mean, this kid is 6'5". He's taking guys on. He's laying his body on the line.
When he knows he's going to be the first overall pick.
Right. And by the way, Tom Brady's on the sideline. Mark Davis is in the building. And they're saying, that's our quarterback. And there's no doubt now. Well, there wasn't any doubt for me about 10 weeks ago. There was no doubt because they had us playing Fernando.
Yep.
By Abby here for the Jet fan.
Yeah, hoping that he would end up in a Jets uniform. It's not going to happen. It just stinks because we've talked about the type of personality that a head coach needs to be here. I think there's two types of personalities to be the quarterback here. One is the one that Jackson Dart has, and two would be this Fernando Mendoza, who's all positivity. And I know he's a little goofy, and I know he's a little corny and all that stuff, but of all the jerks that are out there and the people who don't take it seriously and are doing dumb off-the-field stuff and everything else that we see, I mean, this guy is a breath of fresh air, and he... To know how many guys, by the way, that are not playing in bowl games, and I don't blame them, and I understand bowl games and a national championship game different, but this guy, knowing that he's the number one overall pick in the draft, put everything out there on that run. He just was not going to be denied, and that right there, I mean, that is a championship play if I've ever seen it.
It is, and it really reflects his entire season. It reflects his family story. It reflects the fact that, you know, he came from that area, literally a mile from the building where they were playing last night.
Yeah.
And here you go. They end up winning a national championship. And nobody would have ever thought that Indiana would have won that national championship. But Kurt Cignetti, their coach, has figured out how to do this. And he's using older players. This is a very old team compared to what college teams used to be. And they're somewhat like early onset men playing teenagers that are rising into, you know, whoever they are as players. And you could see it on the field, and you could see that, you know, Kurt Cignetti has it figured out. So good for him, good for them, good for the Big Ten for that matter. And all I could tell you is that, you know, there is it's just amazing watching, you know, a school like Indiana do this last night, because that gives hope to guys like me that went to Maryland.
Well, yeah,
I don't know if it gives anybody hope that went to Rutgers. I'm not sure, or maybe Syracuse or Boston College. But the fact that Indiana went undefeated and won a national championship in college, no, I mean, nobody would have ever thought that possible.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's three factors that got Indiana there. One, they hired the right coach. Two, they found the right quarterback. And probably the biggest one is they paid a lot of money for that roster.
Mark Cuban put some money into that place, man.
So if there is someone backing your program in a big way, you can skip the line. And that's not something that everybody could do prior to the nil days, but now they can. And it is good to see, and I know there's lots of issues with college football these days, but in an impure college football environment, it felt like the purest team could win, even though they ponied up and spent a lot of money, but within the rules. But to have a guy like Kirk Cignetti, who comes from Indiana University of Pennsylvania, then goes to James Madison, then has a press conference when he takes over one of the most losing programs in Division I history and says, I win, I'm a winner, Google me, and then couple years later, he's standing there winning a national championship. I mean, how at 60-something years old, how great is that?
Yeah, it's crazy, man. It really is. And he basically, you know, when asked the question this past week whether or not he would entertain the Steelers job, because he's from Pittsburgh.
That's right.
He said, I am a college coach. I decided this many years ago. I'm staying in college. And that was probably music to the ears of Indiana. Now, you know, the fact is that he's older. I think he stays there. I don't think like another SEC team or, you know, Big 12 team will offer him whatever he wants. I just can't see him ever leaving.
He's a football coach, man. I mean, like he is the direct opposite of Lane Kiffin, right? Like
exactly.
Like he's a football coach. He's happy there. If he ended up jumping someplace, I would be shocked. I just think that he is thrilled to be in a place like that, that support, and he won a national championship there. He's going to be a legend there for the rest of time. I mean, why would you go anywhere?
Well, and they paid him. They gave him a big, huge contract this past year, and I'm sure that there's certain terms in there in terms of buyouts and things like that that would not lead to him leaving. But, you know, this is a moment in time where nobody would have ever guessed that this school would be able to do what it did through the Big Ten, through the college football playoff with a Heisman winning quarterback. And then that Heisman winning quarterback essentially almost playing perfect throughout the college football playoffs. I mean, there was coming into the game, he had more touchdowns than he had interceptions. And then he ran into the toughest defense. And I think the other thing I think about college football is that it goes too long. Oh, this thing needs to end around January 1st.
Sure.
If they can somehow make that happen. And I know President Trump was talking about protecting the Army-Navy game. He wants that to be a standalone game, and I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
But you could also do the Army-Navy game and still have a college football playoff game or two being played that night after the Army-Navy game. You know what I mean?
Maybe, sure.
You know, you could do a lot of different things, but hey, look, it was an incredible season for that kid. I'm rooting for that kid. I think we all should be rooting for that kid. And the question is who are the Raiders going to hire as a head coach? Now I'm starting to think that it's one of these coordinators that are left in these final four teams. I don't think there's anybody coming off of the Raiders, the Patriots staff. I don't think there's anybody coming off of the Broncos staff. I don't think like it's Vance Joseph or anybody like that. I think it could be Clint Kubiak from the Seattle Seahawks. I think he's probably got his choice of jobs, if I had to guess.
Yeah, so you've got two big names off the Rams staff and one off the Seahawks staff that should be getting jobs. Chris Shula and Nate Shielhaus with the Rams, and then Clint Kubiak, as you mentioned, with the Seahawks. And you would imagine if Brian Flores was going to get that job with the Raiders, which had been rumored, they would have hired him by now.
Well, the other thing, too, is Detroit now has hired their offensive coordinator.
That's right.
And he was the offensive coordinator for the Cardinals the last 3 years. You know, he was under Jonathan Gannon. Jonathan Gannon now is being interviewed by the Dallas Cowboys for their defensive coordinator situation.
I mean, that would be a huge hire for them.
That would be because, you know, he obviously has intimate knowledge of the Philadelphia Eagles. He was the defense coordinator when they won the Super Bowl, and that's how he got the job in Arizona. And then, of course, the Jeff Hafley signing is not really that surprising simply because the new GM down there, John Eric Sullivan, came from Green Bay, and where was Jeff Hafley? He was in Green Bay.
Yep.
So, and Jeff, I guess, you know, by all accounts and reports, like you wouldn't know it if you see him. You would only know it if you knew him. You know, he's a guy that's supposedly very intense, very upbeat, and you see all the Green Bay Packer players wishing him well, and, you know, they really like playing for him.
Yeah, you want to talk about a guy who has come up through the ranks in his career. If you go back and look at his resume, he has done everything in college football, in pro football, and he's finally getting his opportunity down in Miami. And what they do with Tua next is going to be interesting. And our old buddy Rob Saleh getting a job with the Tennessee Titans. And I wonder now, as the Dolphins' former head coach, Mike McDaniel, who's very close with Rob Saleh, go with Rob Saleh. And then I would be excited if I were someone who was rooting for the Tennessee Titans, if I had Mike McDaniel there as an offensive coordinator working with my young quarterback who was a number one overall pick last year. But Rob Saleh himself, just from what we saw here, I mean, we saw the Jets get worse when he was fired. But I did not think he was a great head coach. I did not think his preparation was great. I did not like the fact that even when Aaron Rodgers came here, it felt like Aaron Rodgers didn't respect him, where when he goes to Pittsburgh, he really respects Mike Tomlin. So if Mike McDaniel goes with Rob Saleh down in Tennessee, it could really, really work. But if not, I think that's not going to be a You're not going to see Rob Saleh's coming out and being cheered 15 years from now in Tennessee Titans lore.
Aaron Rodgers didn't come here because of Rob Saleh. He came here because of his buddy, the offensive coordinator. That's why he came here. So
who they fired.
Right, who they ended up firing. I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, that Aaron Rodgers disrespected or didn't respect Rob Saleh. I think he did. I just think, you know, giving all that what happened in the 2 years that Aaron was here, it just didn't go well, especially when you fire the coach five games into the second season.
Yeah.
Like when you're coming, you know, it's the amazing thing. When I got traded to the Jets, I never thought in my wildest dream that I was going to have three coaches in 3 years. You know, and what happened to me could happen to Josh Allen if they're not careful. So they fire Sam Weish, the guy who knows me the best. And they bring in, well, they elevated our wide receiver coach, David Shula. David Shula is Chris Shula's dad.
Yeah.
So David Shula was our wide receiver coach. And I don't think he was ready to be a head coach at that point in time. I think he was probably 38 or 39, maybe a little bit younger than that. So and plus our team in Cincinnati was going through a total rebuild and we were losing a lot of plan B free agents. And it was not a good mix. It was not a good mix, me and him. And, you know, that's why they drafted David Klingler in the first round. And then I said, look, I want to get out of here. And they traded me to the Jets. And I was very thankful for that because Bruce Coslett was my offensive coordinator. After that first year, we go 8-8. Bruce is fired because they don't want to lose their defense coordinator, Pete Carroll, the young hot guy.
Yeah.
So Pete Carroll gets hired. And, you know, I love playing for Pete and because he was an extension of Bruce. And we kept our same offense and everything else. And then the next thing you know, they fire Pete and they bring in Richie Kotite and all hell breaks loose. So, like, you have the best player in the NFL right now up in Buffalo. Why you fire this head coach is beyond me. It's beyond me. I understand, you know, the tough people out there want to talk about, you know, oh, he can't get over the hump. He can't do this. He can't do that. You know, that's all BS as far as I'm concerned. The amount of injuries he's had to deal with over the years, the lack of, you know, explosive playmakers with the exception of the quarterback and the running back, the way that they've, you know, won all these games, I would take that 1,000 times over.
Yeah, and by the way, the more confusing thing is promoting Brandon Bean, who was the architect of a roster that was lacking in many, many areas. I mean, how many times do we say it, even before the injuries? For the Bills to win, Josh Allen's got to do absolutely everything because he's got nothing around him. I mean, the defense was a bottom third defense. The weapons, they were never able to replace Stephon Diggs' production and have the wide receivers around him. The offensive line is, I guess the tackles are pretty good, but the interior, everybody says, needed to be improved. I mean, it's just not a good roster.
Well, you want to know something? The moment he got fired yesterday, I'm thinking, okay, where? And I know it doesn't fit what they've done in the past. I'm like, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Put him on the Pittsburgh Steelers. Let him coach that team.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. He wants to stay, he says he wants to stay in coaching and wants to continue to coach. I just don't want to see him go out to Arizona. You know, somebody's going to go out there and 3 years from now we'll be talking about that team again.
Yeah, I mean, if Brian Daboll ends up with the Bills head coaching job, I mean, we're going to be, we just went through with Daboll and Saleh, some of the worst football we've ever seen with these two teams. Loss after loss after loss.
But two horrendous
records.
But
and both these guys are going to land on their feet in two different places?
It's crazy. But in Brian Daboll's defense, you know, Daniel Jones, the year that he plays every game, they go to the playoffs. The next 2 years, he gets hurt. And then the next year, they finally draft a kid that does have a little juice to him. They play him. Everybody gets excited. And then they lose that game in Denver. I mean, that's how close these things are.
I understand, and I'm not going to argue that, but there was 20 games under 500.
I know, but his quarterback was getting hurt. What would the Buffalo Bills look like if Josh Allen missed 10 games in a season?
But Josh Allen and Daniel Jones, you can't compare.
Still, when you have guys that are that important to their team, that the players respect, looked up to, and believe in, and you lose that guy, now all of a sudden the team becomes a shell of itself. And there's only really one team in this league, maybe two, that have had to play with a backup quarterback and didn't really miss that much of a beat. One was San Francisco with Mac Jones, and the other one is maybe the Packers with Malik Willis.
Yeah, I mean, and
they kept them. They won games with them.
And I liked Brian Daboll. I still like Brian Daboll. I understand what you're saying about the injuries, but the stuff that I've heard coming out of that locker room since he's been fired, first off, how he wasn't holding anybody accountable and Abdul Carter was missing meetings the entire year and he wasn't doing anything about it until Mike Kafka, of all people, had to come in and be the disciplinarian. And then, as we've talked about many times, Darius Slayton saying that they need a Tom Coughlin type. Didn't sound like he had control of anything that was going on there. So, I mean, to me, it's just, it would be nuts if he had. And I know him and Josh Allen have a great relationship, but.
And so do they. So does he. So does he and the Pegulas.
Yeah, I know.
Remember when Penn State was looking for a coach and they weren't really sure, like, who they were going to hire? And then all of a sudden they get the guy, Whittingham, from Utah?
Yeah.
You know, Brian Daboll's name was thrown around Penn State because the Pegulas are the ones that give a lot of money to Penn State. They built that hockey arena out there and everything else. And I don't necessarily know that Brian would have wanted it. I think he probably, I can't speak for him. I didn't speak to him directly. I'm just speculating. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, the way that he's probably thinking. But he may have also known that the Pegulas were getting, you know, just a little bit tired of not getting there. And there may have been discussions, you know, about Sean McDermott with Brian Daboll. There could have been some sort of like, hey, come over here and watch this team, watch our team. And maybe they were back channeling. Who knows? All of that stuff goes on in the NFL, by the way, and you never really know who you can trust. But I personally, and I bet you if we had Coach Cower in here, he always glowingly spoke about Sean McDermott and what a great coach he is. He always did.
No, I mean, I think Sean McDermott got a raw deal here, 100%. I mean, I'm not arguing that.
Did you see him in Pittsburgh?
Yes, the Steelers should consider him. I just think that they're going to go by the same formula and have a guy who is like, just like they did with Tomlin, just like they did with Cowher. A young coordinator. This is now your team, and we're going to stick with you, and you're going to be our guy. That's what I think they'll do, but they could do a hell of a lot worse than Sean McDermott. I think that would sort of settle things down there. But they're going to go through, I don't know if they're going to keep Aaron or not, but if they don't, I mean, that's going to be a rebuild situation for them.
I'll tell you what, if he decides to sit out of here,
he's not coming to the Jets.
And the Jets go haywire next year?
No, they can't go haywire. Here's where, see, this is what I disagree with. If they go haywire, no one's going to want to take the job.
They'll keep the GM because they have all the assets.
The only way.
How about if they had the number one pick in next year's draft? You could be a starting your head coaching job with a team with a first round pick, with the first overall pick, which would be the quarterback of your choice. And then you could bring a guy to help support him and everything else.
If you knew that quarterback, like if Arch has a great year and he's the number one overall pick, and you knew that the Mannings would allow him to go to the Jets if a particular coach was there, then sure, I would see that happening. But I just, the Jets, the only way that the Jets become an attractive job is if they start building.
This is where they are right now.
If they have the number one overall pick again, they weren't start building. So the Jets were never an attractive place until you saw Aaron Rodgers look at it as an attractive place after Joe Douglas hit on a bunch of draft picks and they started getting closer and closer.
They had his buddy as the offense coordinator.
Well, yeah, but they brought, yes. But, I mean, Aaron Rodgers talked about that roster and how they went up to Green Bay and there was a young, intense roster and blah, 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 and all the things he said. That's what the Jets need to do, is they need to show the rest of the league that they're hitting on these draft picks and they're starting to trend in the right direction.
Well, I'm saying
if they bottom out again, no one's going to want the job.
No, first of all, who is the quarterback that's going to win them 10 games next year?
Nobody.
Okay, so
I mean, I'm not saying win 10 games, but I'm just going to tell six? You,
there's a really good chance that they're going to have I don't know what Kalshi says or Polymarket, but you could probably predict that the over-under for this team is going to be like 4.
Yeah.
4.5, maybe 5.
Of course, yeah.
Right, and we're going to be sitting here next year at this time talking about who their next head coach is going to be.
Right, but my point is that it'll be someone who can't get a job anywhere else. It's not going to be Mike Tomlin. It's not going to be Sean McDermott. It's not, and this is why I was screaming about John Gruden being the Jets head coach, because no one else has given him an opportunity. And that would be a place where if you're the Jets, you say, we're the one team in the league who's going to give you an opportunity to coach the team. And he may say yes to it. But there's no way if they have another bad season that they're going to have their pick of coaches. They're going to have to pick some other person who's a young coordinator who wants a five-year deal that's guaranteed will be fired after year
two. No, it's one of 32. There's always going to be somebody that would want to take
it. Of course, but there's not going to be someone that you actually think is desirable with head coaching experience that you think is going to be a great hire.
Would you want the Jet job or the Arizona Cardinal job?
The Cardinal job just because of where it is. They're both horrible. Both horrible places.
Would you want the Jet job or the Cleveland Brown job?
That is a toss-up. I mean, I'd probably say the Jet job by a hair. By just a hair. By a hair.